I have a story to share with you this morning. This is a story of my experience when I walked into a Unitarian Universalist congregation for the first time. Each of you here today has a similar story of walking into a Unitarian Universalist congregation for the first time. Whether it happened 40 years ago or 40 minutes ago. Therefore, we shared this same experience in common at some time in the past. I invite you, if you can, to take a moment to bring this experience to remembrance now. How did you do? How did you succeed? Were you able to remember your experience of walking into a UU congregation for the first time? I remember my experience like it was yesterday. Did you remember feeling a certain amount of anxiousness? I know I sure did. But I also felt a sense of intrigue, too. Yet anxiousness predominated. You see, I had recently left an evangelical Protestant church that even God or the gods had never heard of. And I wasn't sure what I believed about God. And if anyone asked me in those days, "Do you believe in God?" I wasn't sure how I would answer that question. This visit to a Unitarian Universalist congregation and these misgivings first happened right here. Well, not right here, but over in what we now call Fellowship Hall. That's when I first came to a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Sitting in there on a Sunday morning and thinking that surely someone would come up to me after the service and ask me some kind of a question about whether I believed in God and what it was that I believed. That's what I thought. I didn't know. I wasn't sure how I would perform on that belief quiz. This anxiousness went on for a while, but eventually, after a number of visits and after I had some conversations with some good people here, I realized there wasn't going to be such a test. My next experience was one that you have probably had too. I told friends and family I was attending, or I was a Unitarian Universalist, and they asked me, "What do Unitarian Universalists believe?" It was just like the question my friend and colleague Tom got on the plaza in Kansas City. How many of you have had that experience? How many of you, a lot of you, how many of you sensed, as I had, that this question was in some way misplaced? Big time. When Tom told these two young women in Kansas City that we are not a creedal faith, he was exactly right. We are a covenantal faith. A creedal faith is one in which correct beliefs are paramount and foundational, and that the symbolism used is precisely referenced to those beliefs in that faith tradition's origin. Creeds are based on beliefs. A covenantal faith is based on one or more covenants. A covenant is like a promise based on a relationship. It is a promise made from the heart, not from the head. How did we become a covenantal faith instead of a creedal one? It wasn't easy, and it didn't happen overnight. Both Unitarians and Universalists experimented with creedal belief formulas in the 19th and into the 20th century. All of those experiments failed to achieve anything except arguments and division. Learning from those mistakes, both groups, Unitarians and Universalists, this is pre-merger history, eventually dropped the idea of adopting a creed. Then there have been experiments with various belief systems within Unitarian Universalist congregations, which could be called creedal light. These came about by the insistence of a group or a majority that assumed their belief system, one or another, was the ideal and the norm and normative. Of course, no organizational directive was involved. Rather, a favored belief system was assumed, and other belief systems not conforming to it were denigrated to the pain and ostracization of those expressing such non-conforming ideas or beliefs. I have seen this happen from time to time in the congregations I have served as a Unitarian Universalist minister. It makes me sad to see lovely people of goodwill and good hearts withdraw when they can no longer feel welcome for having a different understanding. However, I am also grateful these unfortunate incidents appear to be on the decline these days, at least in my experience. Our universalism may be growing. In early 19th century America, many of the Transcendentalists found Unitarianism too stifling to new ideas. Though there were no uniformly accepted creeds in their day, they still had to contend with traditional and presumed belief systems too. A short time before the Transcendentalists started meeting together, Ralph Waldo Emerson's older brother, William, sailed to Germany to study religion and theology. He wrote to Waldo, as Emerson was known to his family, and told him to get his hands on any writings he could find by Friedrich Schleiermacher. Those Schleiermacher writings were an essential foundation to what we now call the Transcendentalist movement. It was a movement that broke with the religious tradition of their day. In his essay, Nature, Emerson portrays that tradition, but doesn't criticize it by saying, "The foregoing generations beheld God and nature face to face. We through their eyes." Using poetic language and style, it is important to note that he saw no meaningful difference between God and nature. Writing this, he then asks, why should we not also enjoy an original relation to the universe? It was a question that perfectly encapsulates Schleiermacher's point, and especially a line he wrote in On Religion that you heard from earlier. Religion must be, he said, some intuition of the infinite in the finite. Like Schleiermacher, the Transcendentalists were also arguing against religion as mere knowing. Rather, their emphasis on religion was about an interior, personal experience, as the Reverend Dr. Reed writes. Of course, this is not the typical understanding of the term religion. Most people today think of religion, as do most dictionaries, as, quote, a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe, and respect for what is sacred. That's a standard definition. Indeed, this meaning is derived from the Latin word religio, religio. However, there is also a Latin word, religare, that ancient scholars, including Augustine, connect to our English word, religion. This Latin word I have seen translated as to bind fast or to tie together again. Religare was a nautical term, which makes some sense in that sailing requires the right things tied down at the right time. While sailing, you don't want your sails flapping in the breeze or you won't get very far. In fact, the RE prefix in the word means to do the action verb again, tie together again. We could imagine a ship's captain ordering his crew to tie down the sails, and the crew responding, "But Captain, we've done that already." To which the captain explains, "Go back around and check them and make sure they are tied down." The implication for religion is that we are sailing through life. Our ship's sails are getting buffeted by the winds. The tie lines could be getting frayed on life's sharp edges. We must tie them together again. The ligare part, meaning tie together, is where we get our English word for ligament. As one who has had knee ligament surgery, I can tell you that the upper and the lower parts of the leg don't work very well together when some of the leg's ligaments are missing. Bad things happen when our threads of connection become frayed or loose. Isn't this our life experience? I know it has been mine. Religion then is a retying of our connections to one another and connection to the interdependent web of all existence. Retying frayed or broken connections is important to our well-being. The legacy we are given comes from Schleiermacher, the Transcendentalists, and others. It suggests that every religion in the history of the world, began as someone's own religious experience. Then someone or a group of followers decided to define this religious experience and made that someone the founder of the religion, and the defined religious experience was then converted into a belief system instead of allowing for the intuition of each follower. This legacy also tells us that each person's religious experience is valid. No one can argue with a person's experience. Not yours, not mine. It is not about thinking or believing the right things. It is about intuiting through experience and feelings the infinite in the finite. The better question to ask then is not, what do you believe, but tell me about your experience. If we say each person's religious experience is valid, this also means there will be those who will talk about their experiences in ways we may not like. This is to say that while intuition about the infinite or the universe is common to all human beings, some will interpret their experiences and will rub us the wrong way. Yet, those who hold these interpretations, such as that their faith tradition is exclusive or the ideal norm, their religious experience, however they define it, is still ultimately human, and it's still ultimately valid, even if we disagree with it, how they interpret it. We would do well to understand that we share this human trait of intuition and feeling in common, no matter how others define it. That religion is not a matter of thinking, defining, and acting also suggests that the essence of religion is available to all, no matter their degrees or their mental abilities. In France, there is a Roman Catholic order of nuns called Little Sisters, Disciples of the Lamb. A number of the nuns in the convent have Down's syndrome. These nuns, whether with or without Down syndrome, live together in one place in religious community, sharing the same offices and the same tasks, where manual labor is adjusted to each according to her abilities. This new way of understanding religion, I believe, is very universalistic. The universalists believe, as I am sure you know, in universal salvation. Universal salvation for everyone. In a metaphorical way, I think it still fits. Only now I would say universalists believe everyone is a partaker in all that is sacred, however the sacred is defined. How do we intuit the universe or the infinite in the finite? Schleiermacher, in his book on religion, gives us a hint on how we find religion through intuition, and it may be a bit of a surprise. He does not suggest that we go out into nature and experience it, although that's not a bad thing to do. Rather, he writes, "Everything is presently in vain for him or her who stands aloof. For in order to intuit the universe and to have religion, we must have found humanity, and we find it only in love and through love." Yes, it is our individual experiences, but we find it in and through the human dimension. And where else can we experience that better than through our own religious community? There are possible conversations about our connections to each other and about this, and with about the space-time continuum we inhabit. The conversation could then continue on to how do we maintain connections each and every day, and what do we do when those connections are frayed and broken? This, in my view, is what we try to answer each time we are together. Let us keep at it. Amen and blessed be.